Kincaid, Mr. Lango.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Matthew Lango, and I represent Paul Kincaid in this appeal. Today, Mr. Kincaid is asking this Court to reverse his convictions on the grounds that, first, the statutes under which he was charged were unconstitutional as applied to him in this case, because that application was in violation of the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. And second, that his conviction be reversed because the indictment against him was fatally flawed. Before I get to those issues, though, I should say a few words about the somewhat unusual procedural nature of this case. This case comes before this Court following a stipulated bench trial. And in this bench trial, the defendant was charged with one count of production of child pornography and one count of possession of child pornography. And following the bench trial, his conviction was sentenced to 360 months in prison. In this bench trial, essentially every element of the offenses was stipulated to. But for the purposes of this appeal, the key facts here are that the production and the possession of child pornography in this case were essentially intrastate. There was virtually no contact at all with interstate commerce in this case. Quite simply, this case involves admittedly awful conduct, but this conduct nonetheless should have been charged under and punished by the laws of the state of Illinois. The case never should have been in federal court. So first, as to Mr. Kincaid's Commerce Clause challenge in this case. To be clear, we are asking this court essentially to reverse itself in terms of its decisions in United States versus Engel and United States versus Blum.
And the Supreme Court in United States versus Rake, are you also asking us to?
Respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I believe that until the Supreme Court conclusively rules on this issue of exclusively intrastate child pornography, that this court is not obligated to follow the Supreme Court's adoption of this market theory in the Rake case. And as we set forth in our brief, the analysis that the Supreme Court puts forth under Lopez, the jurisdictional analysis there, makes much more sense in a case like this. Rake dealt with what the Supreme Court called a quintessentially economic activity, namely the drug market, specifically in that case the marijuana market. And that's not what you have here. There's no dispute that there exists an industry of pornography. What is in dispute, however, is
that... What is the jurisdictional requirement in the statute?
The jurisdictional requirement in the statute is that the thing itself moved in interstate commerce, or that the means of producing the illicit image moved in interstate commerce.
So it's the fact that the film comes from abroad, is that what's important?
That was what the district court found as satisfying the jurisdictional nexus for interstate commerce in this case.
Why isn't that sufficient in your view?
In my view, that is not sufficient because simply saying, okay, the film traveled in interstate commerce doesn't show what I believe the Supreme Court requires you to show, which is a substantial effect on interstate commerce. And there's just no showing of that here. Mr. Kincaid used a Polaroid camera that he had purchased many years earlier and Polaroid film. That is the only jurisdictional hook in this case. And quite simply, We believe that is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Want to save the rest of your time?
I will reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Langle. Mr. Hartzler, you're up at bat again. Having a busy day.
I'm just disappointed with all the people apparently from Quincy that we didn't have one of them. Were they shaking their heads to my population estimate when I said that? Did you say no? I will rely on my brief in this case unless there are questions from the court.
No, actually, I have a question. I wondered if the holdings in Blum and Rake and other similar cases mean that all child pornography cases are federal crimes.
Well, I suppose if you manufactured your own camera and film within Illinois, it would not fall under the federal statute. There's got to be some interstate nexus. So it would not be for all child pornography cases. But certainly, when you use a camera from China and film from the Netherlands, that satisfies the jurisdictional nexus.
But there's a mismatch because all your argument in your brief, it isn't about... You mention it, but it's this notion that this, you know, the Raich-like arguments, there's a market and the interstate and intrastate aspects of the market are intertwined, so anything that happens in the intrastate market affects the interstate. That has nothing to do with where the film comes from. And the problem, if you really want resting on where the film comes from, that seems really de minimis.
Where the film came from provides the interstate nexus that enables Congress to regulate the activity.
There's no limitation to the Commerce Clause. There's no product or service that doesn't have some interstate aspect. Nobody manufactures his own camera, obviously. That's ridiculous.
They will be now.
But even if they did, they'd be using materials that had not been manufactured in Illinois, right? So it just amounts to saying any child pornography is within the reach of the federal government.
I probably should withdraw what I said earlier. I mean, if any marijuana grown anywhere is within the reach of
No, but that's different because the price of marijuana, you know, that's the Wickard versus Filburn. The price of a commodity that's traded in interstate commerce is affected by home consumption, right? The more farmers eat of their own crops, the less is shipped in interstate commerce. So that's fine.
Right, and I think the same theory applies here for child pornography. The more that...
Well, but the difference is that in a case like Wickard, you know, it's substantial, actually. Farmers do consume a substantial amount of their... I mean, not substantial, but they have a choice, buying food, growing food, eating their food, or producing for export or for interstate shipment. So... In the large, it's significant, but I don't see how the purchase of foreign film becomes a significant... There's very little, as far as I know, there isn't much pornography produced by this, right?
I didn't understand.
Polaroids.
I think...
And he's not selling it to anybody.
Correct.
When you talk about in your brief, you know, the global market in pornography and how a lot of stuff that people they're not in the business, but they, you know, the way these people operate, they keep putting things on the internet and it gets shipped all around the world.
Yes.
That's the problem. This seems extremely remote. He's not going to put his Polaroid pictures on the internet.
Why not?
How's he going to do it?
Scan them in, put them on there. He didn't do that. No one is suggesting that he did that. In this particular case.
How would one do it? I don't understand.
You would simply scan the Polaroid.
You'd have a camera that you'd photograph.
Take the photograph.
And then you'd upload that into the internet. that the item?
You'd scan it in and then...
Oh, you scan, right. You can scan the Polaroid.
Mr. Hartzler,
yes.
On page 11 of the defendant's brief, he relies on the case of Jones against the United States. And I wondered what you had to say about that case and the interstate nexus.
You'll have to refresh my recollection.
Well, that's the arson case.
I'm having trouble.
That's arson. The arson case out of out of northern Indiana, where the Supreme Court said that the fact that the house was torched and the products making the house could travel in interstate commerce was not enough to trigger the statute.
I think that our case is more like the Raich case, where there is an interstate market for child pornography, much the same way that there is an interstate.
That's a very different argument from the film having come from abroad.
I appreciate that.
It's completely different.
I appreciate that. I understand.
I think what Judge Ripple is suggesting is that the Jones case casts a certain cloud on the significance of the foreign origin of the film, because there's no house that doesn't contain something that didn't come from another state.
Right. The tension, I think, is between what Congress regulated, the manner in which Congress regulated a product that it was permitted to regulate under the Commerce Clause. So if you can use Raich by analogy to conclude that, like marijuana, child pornography can be regulated because intrastate produced child pornography can be regulated by Congress, then the issue is how can Congress go about regulating it so that there is a federal nexus? And I am not prepared to answer the question of, well, why did they choose the means of producing the photographs? I mean, we have not really briefed that particular issue. But I think that's the tension. If we assume that the Commerce Clause is the only argument that we're really addressing,
well, part of the
an unconstitutional application as applied to the facts of this case.
This court and, you know, so many others have certainly noted how purely intrastate child pornography fuels the interstate market.
Correct.
For whatever reasons, child pornography has been put on a very different trajectory, it seems to me, because
right.
of societal
yes.
concerns about the horrors of it.
And I hope that answers the question about the Commerce Clause, but I'm not sure that it satisfies
me. No, I don't think you've answered Judge Ripple's question based on Jones. Okay, so Jones is a case. The question, as I understand it, is whether arson of a house, say, can be federally regulated on the basis that the house contains something that came from another state or a foreign country. And if the answer is no, which is what the Supreme Court said, then why isn't that equally true? Why isn't it equally irrelevant that the film came from a foreign country?
I think the difference is in the product that results. And as Judge Rovner has indicated, that so long as the ultimate product, child pornography, is something that is widely distributed in interstate commerce such that intrastate production can have an effect on that.
But that's irrelevant. That makes the origin of the film irrelevant.
Yes. Yes. And I think I may have incorrectly answered the question.
You said that was the, but your brief certainly says that's the or a basis of Congress's power here.
Because the Jones, because it wasn't a constitutional case, it was a statutory case under 844I, and the court did note it, that the statute said that the article had to be used in a commerce-affecting activity. And that's different, arguably, I suppose, than the affecting commerce standard that we would use to test the constitutionality of the constitutional breadth of some other statute, such as the one you've got before you.
Well, what can I say? You've certainly captured my interest. Could I ask that you invite supplemental memos on this particular issue? Would that be appropriate? I'm not prepared to answer the questions today, but I'd be delighted to look into it further.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Hartzler. So, Mr. Lango, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Okay.
Well, Your Honor, I would just add to further distinguish the circumstances in this case from Rafe, that unlike Rafe, which dealt with the Controlled Substances Act, in which Congress put in all sorts of language in there about the relationship between intra and interstate narcotics markets. In the statutes under which the defendant was charged in this case, Congress made no effort at all, as far as I can see, to regulate the national market of child pornography by regulating purely intrastate activity. And that's the hook of our argument in this case as to why the jurisdictional requirements of the statutes under which the defendant was charged were not satisfied, and therefore making the application of those statutes to the defendant in this case unconstitutional.
Would you just remind me, so I don't have to go looking, what was his criminal history?
I don't believe he had any.
Well, he had one situation.
Oh, there was. Sorry, I don't recall off the top of my head. I apologize for that.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And Mr. Lang, you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the client. And we thank Mr. Hartzler as well for his marathon session. And.